lineouts, racks.
Pulls, engage!
What an amazing try!
Tries and tackles, dissected by South Africa's top rugby minds.
That is world class!
This is To The Last Drop, your weekly in-depth rugby podcast with Liam Delcombe and Brendan Nell.
Brendan, an interesting weekend of URC action. One derby match involving the Lions and the Bulls, the BXK derby. And for a while it was interesting, and then the Lions fell away. A very good second half performance by the Bulls, especially in that final quarter where they made all the experience count. So that had the makings of a real classic for about an hour, and then suddenly it just, the Lions fell away.
Yeah, I was trying to think of how to describe. I mean, I wrote a match report on that game, as did you. But I was sitting there after I'd finished my match report, and I was trying to think how exactly to describe the game. And I suppose the best way I could put it, because I explained to somebody who didn't see the game, is that the Lions' desperation only took them so far. And it felt very much they could have beaten the Bulls. They had the Bulls. And then the Bulls bench came on, and Vidi LaRue in particular, Kanan Moody, Aka Fonemava, those type of players changed the game for the Bulls, and the Lions really didn't have an answer. I felt there was a bit of a lack of a plan B for the Lions. And the Bulls sort of, they were almost their own worst enemies. Those injuries they had to Elric Lowe and Ruan Lokia, losing Cameron Honeycomb for quite a while, and Witte Chamberlain and Sergio Peterson during the game. A lot of injuries disrupted them. But they also played some really stupid rugby at times on attack. I thought the attack was going really nowhere in that game. And I thought the Lions' plan to sort of suffocate them and sort of live off the scraps was working. But yeah, it only takes you so far. And they didn't seem to have too much of a plan B. And we're probably going to talk about it a bit more, because this almost feels to me like a part of the entire Lions season where they come close, but they're never quite there. And that sort of, that concerns me a bit.
Yeah, I looked at it, especially in that second half where it was still very much a contest, and then they fell away. And the Bulls bench and the experience they had there was almost a microcosm of how these teams go about their business. When I say their business, I'm talking about how they manage, how they recruit, the ambition they show maybe in that department. We can maybe delve into that a little bit later, but for me, that was a certain element that stood out. You're going to be competitive only up to a certain point if you don't have enough ambition. But as I said, we can delve into it a bit later. And then a good win, a very good win for the Sharks away from home, and a much needed one.
Yeah, so one of the things I always find very strange is, because Welsh rugby is really in the doldrums at the moment, but our sides tend to struggle when we travel to Wales. Even when it's the Dragons who are last on the log, and it's, you know, the Bulls are near the top, or the Storm is near the top, there's always a struggle in those games. And quite often South African teams lose it. So I was quite surprised at the stat that the Sharks had never beaten Cardiff before. And from the way they rode their luck a lot of the time, because I thought they were by far the better side on the field. But they sort of also, the Sharks also seem to have these brain farts at times where, you know, they let Cardiff come back in. And I must give Cardiff some credit. That young winger, Tom Bowman, that was playing his third game in the URC, really electric, really a find. He's a Wales under 20 international. Certainly somebody we're going to be seeing a lot of in the future. And the Sharks are, not only in this game, but in other games as well, they extremely vulnerable out wide. And I think that's a real concern going into the second half. They're very well placed on the log after this win. Now they're fourth. They've got a game in hand. But yeah, I think there are some problems out wide. And yeah, for them, when are they ever going to get their top team onto the field?
Yeah. Well, that's the age-old question now. But I'd say this. I mean, given their start of the competition, I think they'd be very happy with how things have gone since then. I mean, they've strung together a couple of good results in the URC. The Storm is, however, also made a bit of a dodgy start. And they just haven't been able to fully wriggle their way out of it. They've had these little peaks of really good performances, but nothing sustained enough to have mounted a challenge similar to that of the Sharks. And they find themselves a little bit on the back foot now since that defeat against Leinster. They kept their powder dry in terms of selection in the previous game against Stade Français, or rather Racing. And that didn't pan out in the end. I mean, very competitive again for a long time, and then fell away quite bad in the second half.
Yeah, it surprised me because going into the game, you saw, and we obviously up north, so we don't see everything that happens down in Cape Town. I know they're overseas, but it seemed like very much in the Cape media, there was this sort of thought that they were going up there to beat Leinster. And I suppose when you put players in reserve for a game, you don't play them in one game to play them in another game, that almost comes naturally. But and I felt, to be very honest, the luck rode against them to have an Irish ref in Dublin. Because of the storm, the Scottish ref. I still don't quite understand how a Scottish ref could get to other places, but not to Dublin. But I suppose there's flights and problems like that. But Owen Cross.
The big storm. Let's just say they were storm.
Yeah. And
like the fairy.
Any of the Stormers fans will probably agree that in that first half, some of those calls were just diabolical. Their scrum was dominating. They weren't getting any of the calls for that. I don't think that was anywhere near the reason why they lost. I think Leinster were by far the superior team on the field. But when you play a team like Leinster in Dublin, you need something to go your way. You need some sort of hope because Leinster put teams away very quickly. And I felt that that was really something that didn't happen for the Stormers. They got calls against them. Dion Farrigo pinned a number of times at the breakdown where I thought he should have won the penalty as well. And that just almost, I don't know, I suppose killed their resolve. And then the second half, their lineouts are shocking. And you can't be at this level trying to win in Dublin if you can't have a lineout that's functional. So it's a strange one, the Stormers, because I almost feel they're the one team. Part of their problem is they haven't evolved. They haven't brought new blood in. They've sort of got the same players they had two seasons ago and same game plan, and other teams have worked them out. And they've had injuries. But, they're in a very, very precarious position at the moment.
Yeah, I felt for Dion Fury because he looked like he was exasperated at times. And then, of course, we saw these images of John Dobson, the director of rugby, where he was, in various stages of despair. So, I suppose, they'll return and they've got a few things to think about. Because if you look at that points table, it's going to be a desperate scrap now for the Lions and for the Stormers to reach the top eight. I suppose when the season started, the Stormers would have aimed higher than just top eight, but sort of getting involved in that top four. But now, especially with the two derby matches coming up when the URC resumes in the second week of February, they basically, the Lions and the Stormers, have to win both those games just to sustain their challenge, just to have an inkling of hope still. I mean, in the case of the Lions, they got desperately close last year. They got to 50 points, 50 log points, same as the Ospreys, but the Ospreys went through to the top eight by virtue of winning one game more. Now, just to get to that threshold, the Lions effectively have to win eight of their next 10 games. And if you look at who they still have to play, obviously there are the derby matches. That's going to be a tall order. I mean, if they can maybe get away with seven, but then they would have to get earn bonus points in a lot of the other games. So, it's certainly troubling for them. I mean, if you look at the Stormers, they probably need to win seven of their last nine games, remaining nine games. It would mean having to win at Loftus. It means having to come to Ellis Park on consecutive weekends and win it at altitude. They've got a nice home run, though, similar to last year or the year before, where they were able to string four or five games together at home and win those. They can probably do the same this time, but they need to obviously, stay in the fight in these derby games, and there's a couple of other games they still need to win in between as well.
Yeah, I think it's first the Stormers. I think you've got some sympathy for them because they've had quite a few injuries. I mean, they've lost the likes of Dion Fury, Evan Rees, Damien Willem. So you can go through all their Springboks. They've lost a lot of them through the season and at crucial times. They also have been their own worst enemies at times. I've got a bit more sympathy for them, and I feel that if there's a team that can come to Loftus and win, it probably is the Stormers. Their track record is good enough there to beat the Bulls on a one-off game. And I think they have beaten the Lions quite consistently over the last two or so years in terms of the derby. So, and with their home run, they can get a bit of momentum if they get certain players back. They can do it. I'm being very optimistic now because, obviously you'd want them to do it because you'd want them to get a top eight place because that qualifies you for the Champions Cup. But But then we turn to the Lions, and anybody who's read stuff I've written over the last season, well, now I've been quite critical. They keep on saying they want to be a top four team. And I always sort of chuckle when I hear this, because to be a top four team, you've got to fire some shots. And I think the perfect example for them, and we mentioned it before on this pod, is when they went to Leinster to play them in Dublin, and the week after, or 2 weeks after, when they played Munster. And Munster were without a coach, without the Irish players, you know, really there for the taking. In both games, they almost played a game plan that they tried to suffocate the opposition and didn't play Lions rugby, didn't run the ball at all, didn't do anything. You know, literally just try to keep the score down. And, you know, that to me just told me a lot about their ambition. And they've got some fabulous players on the Highveld. On a good day, when they hit their straps, they can be brilliant. But there's this thing where they're almost too conservative at times, where they tend to not back themselves. And I don't know, I just feel at times, if you're going to find some shots, you're going to lose games, because not everything's going to go to your end. But you at least will make your fans happy if you score 5 tries and you concede 7. But yeah, to concede 1 try and then lose the game 15-12, you know, or something like that, is not going to win you anything. So I don't know. I feel they have got the players that, I know they've got the lowest budget of all 4 teams. They don't like spending money. They try and look for these bargain basement buys when they buy players. And that's no disrespect to those players, but they don't go for big names or for marquee players. And they try and build something. And I've got a lot of respect for that. But at some point, you've got to back that ambition as well. And I'm just not quite sure they do. And it's cost them in a number of games this season.
Yeah, I suppose you could say that they've taken a bit of a money ball approach to this, but then it needs to be backed up by proper science. And there has to be a desire and ambition as well. And you just don't see that in the way they go about their business. Because obviously you have to evolve. It just feels like, especially in those away matches, that they in this perpetual phase of learning. Like, you know, we just need to stack this experience on top of the previous one, on top of the one before. And they never get to a point where they just go there. And as you say, you know, you go out there and fire shots. If you still fall short, then well, at least you gave it a good go. So recruitment is a thing that they would have to look at. But I suppose also tied to that, perhaps more important than that, is their business plan. You know, why do they exist? Are they a bit like, and I can probably use the football example here, like Tottenham Hotspur, a fantastic players able to put fantastic performances together from time to time, but when it comes down to the crunch, when it comes to the silverware, when it comes to big games, they're not there. And they're a selling club. And the Lions, you get the sense as well, even when they have these patches of success, those players don't stick around, they tend to move on.
Yeah, I'm glad you didn't mention West Ham there, because I think West Ham probably falls into the same category. They can always be in the top 10 of the Premier League, but you never see them winning anything significant. And when they play the bigger teams, the top 6, the big 6 clubs, they inevitably fall short. And I sort of get the same sort of feeling with the Lions. They'll pick up a win here and there. But yeah, you go back to the start of their season, they've had that wonderful 50-pointer on Edinburgh. And they won their first 4 games. They were really on a roll. And then it came to their first EPCR game. And then they played a total second string, sent half their players back. And I know it's good to blood younger players and get the depth better, but you just felt they lost momentum then. They lost momentum against Leinster. And then they sort of settled into a rut. And yeah, I wouldn't have been surprised if they beat the Bulls, but I would have been surprised in the way they did it because it's certainly the rugby they were playing. The Bulls were the ones playing the rugby on the Saturday, and they were almost trying to suffocate them and live off the scraps. And I didn't think the Lions' attack was anywhere near what it was at the beginning of the season, and that really worries me.
Yeah. Just one final word on the Stormers, and I'll probably have to look at what the bookmakers offer. But I'll be prepared to venture a bet that they'll still get into the top 8. If you look at what lies ahead for them, I mean, they've got the 2 trips to the IFL. They can probably win one of them, if not both. But if you use the argument, they win one. They're away to the Scarlets at some point, and then to Ulster. And then they have that home run of games against Connacht, Benetton, Dragons, and then Cardiff. All those games at home. So, you know, if there may be 2 defeats in there for them, but I think they're capable of winning the rest.
Now, I was just going to say, I was looking at the log here, Liam, and just something very interesting. We talk about South African teams making the log, but the thing that sort of surprised me, and maybe this is a bit lopsided because a lot of these teams have had games at home, is that 5 and 6 are Cardiff and Scarlets, which I am not sure. One of them might be a top 8 team, but I'm not sure both of them are. Munster in 7th, Edinburgh in 8th, Ulster in 9. There's Benetton in 10, which I think probably go higher. And then, so there's a lot of teams, and the difference between the Bulls in 3rd and the Stormers in 12th is 9 points. And so we've still got 5 or 6 rounds that can easily be closed, but you'd need a bunch of things to happen, as you say. I could see some of the Welsh teams falling out. And of course, a lot of these teams have to play each other still. Some strange results this weekend. I mean, Zebre beating Ulster, and Benetton losing, 33-0. But these are all strange times of the Six Nations looming. So you can't really put too much on it.
Yeah. And interesting, after the Six Nations, the week after the Six Nations, you would have Leinster traveling to South Africa for 2 games. They play the Bulls at Loftus, and then they go to Kings Park to play the Sharks. Now, I think everybody can accept that they, given the points wall they have already, I think they're 11 clear of Glasgow Warriors. They'll probably go on and win the league. They'll top the league at the end. But that little mini tour of South Africa, those 2 games, it'll be interesting to see how they select, because it's on the back of Six Nations. Will they rest those players for 2 weeks? Will they spare them the trip? Or, you know, maybe they'll rest some of those guys for the first week and then go sort of fully loaded in the second one against the Sharks, because that will have a massive impact on where the Bulls and the Sharks finish as well, potentially.
Yeah, one thing about the Leinster this season, I must admit, when you talk about the so-called second-string side, the one big difference this year is that they've got an Arche Sneijman and they've got a Jordy Barrett, who don't have to be rest 6 days. And Sneijman, he is, I mean, he's been exceptional in the scrums as well. And, I mean, those 3 players make a huge difference to a younger team. Just Arche, just how many offloads a game does he average nowadays, and just Jordy popping up everywhere. I think from that point of view, their second side is a lot stronger. That's if they do send those players with, there's a caveat to that. Yeah, they've traditionally sent second string teams down to South Africa. I suppose it also depends about where they are in Europe at that stage, and you know what their Champions Cup fixtures are going to be around then. But yeah, I don't think it's going to make or break their campaign. They'll start, even if their second string side is still going to be competitive. But I think both the Bulls and the Sharks are eyeing that game for a victory for themselves. And so the rest of the competition is probably hoping for that as well, so they could haul them in. Whether they'll overtake them, I think the big thing for them is when they get to those knockout rounds, both in Europe and both in the URC, are they going to fall short again? That curse, that hoodoo that everybody will be talking around those weekends, will they be able to overcome it? And they've got to break the curse at some point. So the way they've been this season, I wouldn't bet against them breaking it this season. Yeah.
There's the opposite of the Lions, where Leicester sometimes showed too much ambition. They were winning.
You always feel like a team, yeah, that's the type of team that when you see them, and I mean, I remember this with the Bulls semi-final win last year, is even though you're ahead, and even though it's the 77th minute, you're still not comfortable against them, because you know they can score 2 tries in 2 minutes and come straight back at you. And yeah, I don't know. The Lions, yeah, I think we should probably stop bagging the Lions a bit now at the moment. They've got a lot of soul searching to do. And I don't know, I won't be popular down at Ellis Park or Emirates Airline Park, but I still wonder if they've got the right personnel and the right ambition from the top down. The players, of course, play their heart out, but they can only do so much on the field. So, yeah. But it's not begging them. Otherwise, I'm going to be called a hater.
Nobody wants that, Brendan.
Yeah, my accreditation was revoked a while back. I don't know if you remember that, a couple of years ago. For a couple of days, and then was reinstalled because they didn't like stuff I wrote. So they do get some sensitive at times, but let's hope they take this all as constructive criticism.
Stop stepping on Mufasa's tail. Time to move on. The Six Nations kicks off this week, with a couple of very interesting fixtures. You've got England, the one that probably most people will look forward to is the one England matching up against Ireland. This is a bit of a, I suppose, a revenge game for Ireland, because if you look at what happened last year, where they got toppled by England, they don't want to set the record straight. Do you see it happening? Or do you see, you see England backing it up?
It's an interesting one, because there's so much talk about England, and there's especially from their media tend to dominate the six. There's also
around England, Brendan.
Yeah,
so give it.
No. I was going to say, I mean, when you listen to their media and stuff like that, they're always on the verge of total disaster or on the verge of being world champions. There's never in between for them.
And Phillips is new.
Yeah, and Steve Borthwick is either, you know, Rossi Erasmus or he's Eddie Jones. He's one of two evils for them. I find it.
I've now got a very interesting image of Steve Borthwick, by the way.
Well, I mean, yeah, you could take it either way with both those characters. I mean,
they never thought him at that one till now.
I don't think he's as interesting a character as either the other two that I mentioned, to be real.
No,
But he's rather, yeah. I think when you look at, we shouldn't be, I'm begging people on the show. It's the start of the Six Nations. We're supposed to be optimistic for England. They're capable of one-off victories. They're definitely capable of live victories.
Every disruptor still.
Yeah. Whether they've got the team at the moment to win a triple crown, a Grand Slam, a Six Nations, I'm not so sure. I think the Six Nations is going to come back straight back down to Ireland and France. And this year, I'd probably back France to win the competition. But in this one-off game, they're playing in Dublin, so it's going to be a big task for them to win there. I see they're going with three Jackers, the two Curry brothers and Ben Earl. And yeah, it's a very lightweight loose crew, especially the way Ireland play.
It speaks to the way they want to play. I mean, they probably feel they need to do something different, which not the worst thing, because, I mean, if you look at some of their performances in the autumn internationals, played well in patches, but again, there was nothing convincing or sustained where you could take that form into Six Nations to say, you know what, we can build on this.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the one good thing I think about this is they've targeted Ireland's breakdown. And that's somewhere Ireland gets away with murder almost every single game. They flood the breakdown. That's the key to Ireland's game, is quick ball, for quick ruck ball. So if they can slow that down, if they can disrupt it, they've definitely got a chance. And they can beat Ireland. I just think, I don't know, Ireland to me are too polished. They're too street smart. I think they can probably challenge for the title. I don't think they're quite the Ireland of last year or the year before, but they're certainly not a bad side. And I would, if I had to put money down on it, I'd back Ireland every day against England.
Yeah. Look, at England, I think, will also have a bit of a strut about them in the way they've changed captains. Mario Tosha is now in charge, and I think he'll be sort of more out there than Jamie George. I think they'll fire some shots, but yeah, I think ultimately Ireland would be far more organized, far more, they'll be too ruthless, they'll be too clinical, and I think they'll win this one comfortably in the end. Ireland, of course, the interesting thing here is Simon Easterby taking over.
I was going
to
say.
So we'll have to see how that changes, if there'll be anything discernible in the way they play. I'm seeing very much an Ireland win. And just if you take it further down the line, you spoke about whether they can win the championship. I agree with you. It'll be between Ireland and France. Last year, Ireland basically set up their win in the Six Nations on the back of beating the pants of France in Marseille in the opening game. This year, France will have to go to Dublin. And of course, whoever wins that could may well go on to win the championship.
You forget, Liam, they've got the GOAT. They can't be beaten if they've got the GOAT.
The next thing you're going to say to me, Andy has to travel.
But it's not false.
So that'll be an interesting little exercise for France to see, you know, if they've evolved, you know, since last year and are able to pull off a win in Dublin. They, of course, are entirely capable of that. If you look at their squad, if you look at their depth, if you look at obviously the game breakers, they've got that in bucket loads. And they've got recent form as well. If you look at the players, Toulouse and Bordeaux-Begley bringing to the French setup, they've got a lot going for them. So my bet will probably still be France, but they've got three away games in this campaign. So, and of course, that one in Dublin is the one that stands out, and they need to win that one if they're going to go on a little bit in the championship.
I just think for them is what's impressed me over the last year from their Six Nations last year is just how they've increased their depth. They've now in every position, probably very much like the Springboks, got 2-3 players they can call on. It's not such a big thing if Ntamack or you know, Jalibe plays. It's not a big thing which winger plays. Of course, Damien Penoa is still, I mean, he was exceptional against the Sharks a couple of weeks ago. But I mean, there are other players when those players are out that step in and are pretty much at the same class. So I think depth wise, they look better. As you say, three big games away from home. And the nice thing about the Six Nations always is that we can always have a surprise. I think when you look at the other teams, Scotland, they've had quite a few injuries now. I'm not sure. I'm not sure they've got the depth, but their strongest team can challenge on a one-off all those sides. But I think the injuries are probably going to hamper them. But you can still get a surprise here and there. The fixture that...
Well, they are still potential kingmakers. I mean, they can pull off a one-off win that just upsets the flow of, you know, the one of the top two sides.
Yeah. I mean, Wales are pretty much in siege mode at the moment. They just, they want to get beaten by four. Their big game will be against Italy. I can see France beating them quite well in Cardiff this weekend.
That first game could be early. Yeah.
Yeah, and so then Warren Gatland's got a lot of problems there. They've got young players. They're obviously trying something new. Yeah, but you don't see much from Wales. So I think if anybody can upset it, it's either England or Scotland, but I can't see it being anyone other than those big two.
Yeah, you don't see wins. I mean, Italy kind of flirted with the idea of being major disruptors last year, but then if you look at their results on the autumn series, not great, not convincing. So, you know, if they finish third, that will probably be their ceiling, or if they were aiming there. As for Wales, what is it now? Is it 12 defeats in a row? If they're not careful, you know, they're going to, I think they start with two away games. The one against Italy is away to gain in a row. If they lose that one, you could have they could potentially end up after the Six Nations with 17 straight defeats. And I mean, that is just,
I think the only potential upset this weekend for me, the potential upset is Italy-Scotland, with Scotland being vulnerable because of the injuries. So to me, Italy, if you can always start a competition well, whether you've got the firepower to go straight through the competition with the same sort of level of play. But this weekend, definitely, they have a chance in Edinburgh.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, Italy have, over the last couple of years, pulled off the odd big one. So that's entirely possible that they do that again. But if you look at the autumn series results, they would have expected to do a bit better there.
Yeah. I think before we close off them, just a final point, the Blitzboks finished fourth. I think they would have been disappointed with their results in Perth. Very good 19-0 victory against Fiji. Totally shut Fiji down in the quarterfinal, which I was very impressed with. Had some, I'm going to call it bad luck, against Australia in the semi-final where they lost the Golden Point, with some very interesting calls that went against them in that game. A string of penalties and a try that Australia got from a knock-on, which wasn't reviewed. But that's the way it goes in sevens. I'm not going to sit here complaining about referees. It happens. I think the biggest disappointment for Philip Snyman would be the fact that they lost to Spain in the third place playoff. That wouldn't have been their standards. So, but there's definitely improvement, and we'll have to get Philip on at some point again, just to see how things are going there. But there's certainly, you can see there's a plan now, where last season at times there wasn't, and you can see there's a bit of passion again in the team, and that's great to see.
So I suppose what he's searching for now is consistency in executing that plan, and then you know, hopefully the results will follow. Because if it doesn't, then you have to come up with a different plan. But yeah, you're right. I think you can see that there is something developing. So we'll be in a much better position further down the line
further down the series.
Yeah.
As far as let's box it. So.
I would say, other than that, there's not much else rugby going on this weekend. I'm just looking at the fixtures list, yep. And the only other game this weekend, which we won't be talking about, is Andorra taking on Israel. We won't be watching that one, guys. Sorry. But we'll
keep that care. Where is this game taking place, Brendan?
In Andorra. So.
Oh, at altitude. I'm going to put money on Andorra just because of the ground advantage. The thin air is hopefully in their favor.
More than that, I can't say, Liam. I can't dispute your analysis there in any way.
Yeah, but you know, the higher the mountain, the cooler the breeze. So I'm going to go with that.
I'm start singing Climb Every Mountain. Anyway, but I think at that point, we can probably start chatting off and saying goodbye.
We should.
Before we get ourselves into trouble. Anyway, it's going to be an interesting weekend. We'll be back next week and we'll have a lot to talk about, because then there'll be a Stormers Bulls derby as well to talk about in Cape Town.
Yes, absolutely. Are you going to that, Brendan?
Unfortunately not. I'll be in Pretoria, and I won't be at the Bulls Supporters Club, but I'll be definitely keeping an eye on that there.
Okay. Well, yeah, we'll have lots to chat about next week. So that's it from us. Goodbye from my side.
Cheers. Speak next week.
Thanks for listening. For the latest insights and rugby analysis each week, plus new episode alerts, please follow or subscribe to the series. Or find all episodes at jacarandafm.com or the Jackpot app.